see it.
Time for the Hamilton Corner with today's guest host, Miki Addison.
Darkness is not an affirmative force. It simply reoccupies the space vacated by the light.
This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio.
And Urban Family Talk.
It should be uncomfortable for a believer to live as a hypocrite.
Delivering people out of the bondage of mainstream media.
And the philosophies of this world.
God has called you and me to be his ambassadors. Even in this dark moment. Let's not miss our moment.
And now, the Hamilton Corner.
Welcome to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm Miki, and this is my last day filling in for Abraham Hamilton III. And what an interesting week we have had. I mean, there has just been so much going on and so much revealed about who people are. Like, we live in this country, and we are living shoulder to shoulder with these people who have for a long time been able to, in some ways, not in all ways, but in some ways, they've been able to just conceal who they are. And now these people are totally unhinged. I think that's probably the best way to describe them. And because they are unhinged, they are revealing so much about themselves. I want to say this, and in this segment, and we're going to do a few different things here on the Hamilton Corner. This is the Friday edition of the Hamilton Corner. Do a few different things. But in this segment of the program, I want to talk about Democrats sort of getting back to their roots in this country. And, you know, they went to great lengths to really try to conceal the history of the Democrat Party, to pretend that they were and have always been the party for black people and the party for minorities and all of these things. And we know that that just isn't true. But they've done a masterful job at concealing that from people, concealing that from their base, making sure that, specifically speaking, which, by the way, can I just say, you know, I know I've been filling in for Abe, and so a lot of people are sort of meeting me for the first time, standing in for Abe, but I don't do well at political correctness. You may have noticed, and I don't apologize for that. We live in a very sorry time where everybody's sorry, but nobody repents. You understand? Everybody's always apologizing, but nobody's ever repenting. And so I don't apologize for not, you know, cowering in the corner to political correctness and trying to use all their terms. So this is just straight talk radio, right? And that's the way I communicate in real life. So it's the way I want to talk to our audience here. But what we have is we have Democrats who are revealing sort of the DNA of their political party. They are resorting to what worked for them in the past, threat and intimidation. And if you've been listening for the last few weeks, the last couple months, you hear Democrats repeatedly coming out and calling for violence, or maybe supporting violence, or saying that the violence will not stop. And there's so many people who are like, I can't believe this is happening. They're like, I can't believe this is the time that we're living in. Oh, my goodness. They're all clutching their pearls. They're like, oh, and you know, no, this is who Democrats are. This is the history of their party. This is a part of their DNA. So just to remind you of some of the things that we've heard over the last few weeks, over the last couple of months, and even this week coming from Democrats. Let's go. I think this is going to be clip one, Jason. Roll it.
I want you to talk to them, whether they're independent or whether they are Republican. I want you to argue with them and get in their face. And
that's my call to action here. Please don't just come here today and then go home. Go to the Hill today. Get up in the face of some Congress people.
You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's why I believe if we are fortunate enough to win back the House and or the Senate, that's when civility can start again. But until then, the only thing that the Republicans seem to recognize and respect is strength. And you heard how the Republican members, led by Mitch McConnell, the president, really demeaned the confirmation process, insulted and attacked not only Dr. Ford, but women who were speaking out.
If we can't protect the children, we can't protect anybody. If you see anybody from that cabinet in a restaurant, in a department store, nation. You get out and you create a crowd. And you push back on them. And you tell them they're not welcome.
The people are going to turn on them. They're going to protest. They're going to absolutely harass them until they decide that they're going to tell the president, no, I can't hang with you.
They have used the power that they have gotten for all the wrong things. They want to keep themselves in power. They want to cater to the special interests. It is time for us as Democrats to be as tough as they are, to be as dedicated as they are, to be as committed as they are. Michelle always says, Michelle Obama, I love her, you know. She and my wife, like, really tight, which always scares me and Barack. But Michelle always says that, you know, when they go low, we go high. No. No. When they go low, we kick them. That's what this new Democratic Party is about. Okay. We're proud as to be Democrats. We're willing to fight for the ideals of the Democratic Party. We're proud of our history. We're proud of our present. And we're proud of the future that we can create for this country. And we're not in this just to make a statement. We're in this to win.
Oh, my goodness. Now, there. Well, let's all pack up and go home. That's it. There's no more show left to do. We don't even need to comment on what we just heard. It is so obvious that this is a part of the Democrat Party's DNA. Now, you would think that I'm probably going to start with Eric Holder, you know, his most recent comments, and even how Michelle Obama came back and said, no, we still need to go high. We got a clip. We're going to play it in just a second here. But no, I actually want to go back to Hillary Clinton. And I want to comment on Hillary Clinton's assertion that you cannot be civil. This is her quote. You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for, what you care about. That's the DNA of the Democrat Party. That's the party that gave us the KKK. That's the party that gave us threat and intimidation. That's the party that brought us lynchings in the South. That's the party that lynched white Republicans who stood up for the humanity of black people in the South. You cannot be civil with a political party that wants to destroy what you stand for. And oh, how true that was for blacks in the South at the hands of Democrats who could not stand and be civil for what they perceived as what the Republican Party was attempting to destroy. And what was it that they cared about? Among other things, slavery and oppression, dehumanizing people. So, you know, lynching black folks because they got uppity enough to vote is a part of the Democrats' DNA. So when Eric Holder, now fast forward, when Eric Holder says, I'm proud of our history, I'm proud of our present, and I'm proud of the future that we want to create, he's not lying. He's not overspeaking. That's not sensationalism. He's speaking in terms of his true and genuine sentiment. Because when he's talking about violence, and when he's talking about threat and intimidation, what he is seeking to do, and the rest of these liberals, the rest of these Democrats, what they are seeking to do is to stifle political engagement. Please understand this, folks. Make no mistake about it. These various calls are not calls to attack or harass politicians. They are meant to scare you. They are meant to threaten you. This is the Democrats' Party's most recent iteration of scare tactic. This is how they keep people away from the polls. It's the 21st century version of literacy tests, violence, property tests, grandfather clauses, purges from voter rolls, poll taxes. That's their DNA. Violence, threat, and intimidation. That's their native tongue. That's the language they speak with. And I'm telling you, for people who are so willfully ignorant, it boggles my mind. We should not be shocked. We should not be surprised by this. This violence not only calls for violence, but actual violence, threats, intimidation, murders. That's in the history. That is in the DNA of the Democrat Party. And though they've been able to cover it up for quite some time, and there's so many people who have been willing to give up all reason to be affiliated with them, they are resorting. They are turning back to who they actually are. They are the party that would lynch a black man for thinking himself human enough to have rights and that right to vote. They are the party that would hang a man from a tree with a sign around his neck stating that he voted. Do your own history facts. Look up your own history facts. This is not a joke to them. This is not a game to them. This is an ideology that we are at war with. And it doesn't stop with politicians being harassed in restaurants. Please understand what I'm saying. The goal and the aim is not to stop politicians. The goal and the aim is to stop people. So while they're calling for threat and intimidation, while they're calling for violence, for people to get in people's faces, they're not limiting that to politicians. They're expanding that to reach anyone who has conservative thought. And why do I tell you that? I tell you that because they see power having slipped from their hands, and they will do whatever it takes to get it. And if that means keeping you away from the polls so that you don't vote, if that means manipulating you and making you think that you're racist, or in my case, that I hate myself. I hate myself. That's exactly what they will do. They are in desperation mode. That's why they have no other alternative except to revert back to what they thought worked for them at one time in this country. Let us not turn a blind eye to this. Let us not cower in the face of this intimidation. You can't wear a red hat. You can't have a bumper sticker on your truck in this country. Violence, threat, control, manipulation, that's in the DNA of the Democrat Party. Eric Holder said the new Democrat, there's no new Democrat Party. They are now as they always have been, the party of oppression, suppression, control, threat, violence. Make no mistake about it. This is a war of ideology. They sense that they're losing. Let us turn up the heat.
Shining light into the darkness, this is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio
and Urban Family Talk.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm Miki in for Abraham Hamilton III, and it is my joy to talk to one of my favorite people, Executive Vice President Mr. Ed Vitagliano. We're going to talk about a new article that you have written for the newest edition or issue, I guess you say issue, of the AFA Journal. It's the November issue. And you are asking the question, is religious liberty for everyone? And I just thought it was so insightful. I wanted to have a discussion around it. Also want to have a discussion around our engagement as we are out in the public square. What does it look like that now we have, such open celebration of so many different faiths, if you will, and even no faith at all in this country. What does our engagement look like for Christians going forward? But first, let's start with talking about how you unpacked this question: is religious liberty for everyone?
Well, and thank you for having me on the show, Miki. You know, I wanted to touch on this issue, and I've been talking with Randall Murphy, the editor for the AFA Journal, really for a couple of years, because this issue comes up now more and more often because we have more and more exposure in our country to other religions other than mm-hmm. Christianity, or to some extent Judaism. So you've got Islam, you have Hinduism, Buddhism, a lot of the Eastern, you know, religions through yoga and all that kind of thing kind of get elevated to a place of discussion, even though the vast majority of people in our country still identify themselves as Christians. So the question is asked, is religious liberty for everyone? And there's a lot of disagreement on the answer to that. My take is that in terms of the founding fathers, there is a very strong case to be made that they intended religious freedom to be extended to all Americans. So I answer that question, is religious liberty for everyone in America, as yes. That's mm-hmm. what the founders intended. And then I go ahead and build that case. Quote: it's only 1,200 words, so I couldn't get into it in great depth. But quoting founding fathers and putting the biblical perspective on it as well. So that's why I wanted to answer it.
Okay. Yeah. And you know what? I think that on the surface, a lot of Christians listening to us right now would say, yes, we believe in religious freedom. Yes, we believe in religious liberty. But when you start to unpack and kind of break down some of the undertones of that sentiment, what might be revealed, Ed, is, well, I believe in religious liberty as long as their religion is right. As long as they agree with me, as long as they are celebrating and favoring Christianity, let's talk about why this is problematic for all of us if that were to ever happen.
Well, you know, here's the thing. You know, Christians, and this is the kind of thing that when we talk about Christians in America, we talk about Christians in the world, okay? We're not in heaven where God's will is done mm-hmm. perfectly. We are here on earth. In fact, Jesus says to pray, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. So we know that that is the prayer that one day the kingdom of God, the kingdom of heaven will be manifested on earth and God's will be done here even as it is done in heaven. But in the meantime, for the time being, God's will is not done perfectly as it is in heaven. So Christians have to ask these questions all the time. How do I interact in a society? You know, let's say I'm living in Saudi Arabia and it's illegal to have my Bible out in public, or mm-hmm. it's illegal to try to convert someone to Christianity. So Christians have to ask that question. How do I act in a culture that is hostile, maybe not always openly, but for the most part, hostile to my faith? But in America, it's a whole different ballgame. How do I operate in a country that is still, for the most part, open to the public expression of my faith? And what do I do with faiths that are not true? I mean, I don't believe that Islam is true. So am I compromising my Christian faith by saying, well, Muslims, according to the First Amendment, Muslims have religious freedom? And I don't think we are compromising our faith. We will get into issues. Am I supposed to help Muslims with their faith?
Yes.
The answer to that is no.
No.
You know, I'm not supposed to help them convert people. So we were talking during, you know, before this segment, mm-hmm. you and I were talking about the fact that questions arise, for example, in New York City, where there was an effort made to stop a mosque from being built. Mm-hmm. And there were actually Christians who filed, you know, like an amicus brief mm-hmm. on a federal challenge in the courts to that kind of effort to keep that mosque from being made, built. And I think those Christians were wrong to do that. They are certainly right to say religious liberty exists in America for everyone, but you should not aid a mosque in being built.
Yeah.
Because you're helping to promote a false religion.
Yeah, and I think that this is so important. So we could kind of just drill down here, because I think the question that people have is when they say, well, you know, if Christians are for religious liberty now, and, you know, in the DNA of our organization here, we are encouraging believers to be active. We are encouraging them to stand in the public square. And so there are attacks that come back at Christians where people say, well, you actually don't believe in religious liberty. You are trying to push your beliefs on us. You want laws that reflect your Christian beliefs. Help us explain or understand why that's not accurate.
Okay, well, first of all, everybody in America has the right to vote according to their convictions. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I would say is that Christians, like everybody else, have absolutely the same right and freedom to vote according to their convictions. So people will say, well, then you're pushing your Christianity on it. Well, if that's the way you're going to look at the First Amendment, then you would have to make the opposite argument that only atheists are allowed to vote, because supposedly only atheists would have non-religious convictions from which they are casting a vote. Well, the Founding Fathers intended for everyone from every perspective to be able to vote according to their convictions. So that means I'm not forcing Christianity on anybody, because you can't force a person to become a Christian. Biblically speaking, a person can only become a Christian if they put their faith and trust genuinely in Jesus Christ. And so you can't force someone to do that. You can force someone to outwardly conform, but that doesn't make them a Christian. So we're not forcing people to become Christian. We are simply voting according to our Christian principles, which is why an atheist has the right to vote according to their principles. And from a biblical perspective, I would say this is kind of like the golden rule. Mm-hmm. I'm doing unto others as I would have them do unto me. So I treasure my religious freedom. The atheist treasures his freedom to do, his or her, to do things the way they want. The Muslim, the Hindu, the Buddhist. The intent of the founders was for everyone to come into the marketplace of ideas, say their piece, try to persuade others to see things from their perspective. Then you cast your vote, and the chips fall where they may. And so that freedom is a genuine treasure for everybody, no matter what they believe in their hearts.
And, you know, I think we can safely say, now you check me on this if we can't safely say it, but I think that we can safely say that what Christians find themselves, what we should, I would say, find ourselves advocating for is what the founders would have described as self-evident. Even apart from Christianity as a religious belief, there we're talking about God's moral law. We're talking about things that actually have no bearing on what your religion is. There are some things about the value of human life and about human sexuality that are evident because God has made them evident, even if people don't fear him or submit to him. And we know that the way to follow him is through Jesus Christ. But aren't we advocating for some things that our founders would have said is self-evident?
Absolutely. And we find this in the Declaration of Independence, because Thomas Jefferson was talking about was a collection of natural rights.
Yes.
He says that these rights are according to the laws of nature and nature's God. And so you come to that famous statement that Thomas Jefferson makes in the Declaration, we hold these truths to be, this is what you're talking about, self-evident, yeah, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And what the founders would say is that people have a right to think in their minds and believe in their hearts what they want. The government should not try to coerce them away from those things. That's the job of the persuasive neighbor as we interact over these important issues. Now, the kind of paradox that this creates is that some people then say, well, are you saying that our founders believed we had an unalienable right, a self-evident right to not believe in God, to worship a false God? Well, obviously from the Christian perspective, we would say, well, God doesn't want us worshiping false gods, you know, or, you know, the devil. You know, you have some of these instances where people want to put up these statues to the devil. No, God is not giving us that right in the sense of promoting it, but because we have free will, In a sense, the founders were recognizing that people have the free will to choose what they want to do with their minds and their hearts. And as a result, they kind of encoded that freedom in the First Amendment. So no, God does not encourage us to do it, but the founders were recognizing that people, and I know that free will is argued, you know, between Calvinists and Arminians, for example, but there is a way for Calvinists to view this too. I don't want to open that can of worms, but but the founders were saying we have free will. The First Amendment is recognizing that, and government should not be the one that tells you you must believe in Christianity, because that's the church's job to preach the gospel.
I think pretty early on, as the Lord, you know, reveals himself to us and then sets apart a people and revealing himself to that, to those people, and then ultimately the faith getting to us through the Lord Jesus Christ, it is very clear that the Lord sets before us death and life.
Right.
That it is, and it is up to us to choose that, right? And so the choice is very evident. Why do you think this is a stumbling point for so many Christians? I think even as, because what we're going to do is in a moment here, we're going to talk about how important these midterms are that are coming up November 6th. We're going to talk about that. But I think some Christians would feel like, man, we just got to get the win. If people can just be compelled to live right, and then maybe they'll kind of see the light of day.
Yeah. And this is, again, one of those kind of areas where Christians, you have to wrestle with the scripture some to see, well, what is it that God is saying in the word? Because what we live here in America, the freedom to change our government, our Romans 13 version of government, you just don't see that in Scripture. So, because, you know, the New Testament church was living under the Roman Empire, and so there are many unique challenges to figuring out how a Christian is supposed to operate when we have all this freedom. Okay, that was just not in view for the New Testament writers. So I would say this: look, laws teach us things. In fact, Paul says that the law was a tutor to bring us to Christ. So laws teach. If you look at the Old Testament, the law of Moses said, you know, fathers, instruct your children. You put the law, you know, when you go into the house, you know, it's there. The law is everywhere, and it teaches us things. Now, that we know the law can't save us, but the law teaches us. I think, for example, about the Civil War. I think about the changes to Jim Crow by I'm trying to think of the Supreme Court decision in 1954 that in schools got rid of
Brown
versus Board of Education in Topeka, Kansas. So
yeah,
when those kinds of things become law and become the law of the land, people begin to be trained by that.
That's right.
And the same from a negative perspective, the Supreme Court Supreme Court decision, Obergefell, legalizing same-sex marriage. You're going to see more and more children, more and more young people accept homosexuality. And it's already happening.
That's right.
Why? Because the Supreme Court said this is right. So laws teach. And when Christians go to the polls and when they vote for candidates, they have to keep in mind that the laws that these people are going to pass, the judges that are going to be appointed to the federal bench and the Supreme Court, they're going to be making rulings that will teach the next generation what is right and wrong. And Romans 13 says that God created government and with the purpose in mind of making it a servant of God. So government is supposed to promote the good and is supposed to punish evil, but it's good and evil from God's perspective. So whenever we are having the freedom to vote for the next government, as it were, that's going to be in D.C. or in our state capitol or on our school board, we have to keep in mind the laws they pass are going to train the next generation.
Man, I think that's so powerful, Ed. And I think that it really should provoke all of us to be active, to be involved when you think about laws teaching and what are those laws saying and how do we, as Christians living in the United States of America, what a blessed experiment that this country has been, that we actually have the opportunity to let the world knows what God says on issues.
Right.
We have an opportunity to actually be a part of that. And so I want to turn, you know, we've been talking, I've been encouraging certainly on the Hamilton Corner, I've been encouraging listeners to really not take for granted whatever momentum they think may be on the side of conservative thought. Because here is something that you can be sure of, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Liberals are not in favor of your liberty. They present to you this facade, this fake picture of being in favor of your freedom. But really, when you look at the calls for violence, you look at the threats against conservatives, they don't want you to be a free thinker, do they?
No, they don't. And that's why Hillary Clinton and others were always talking about the First Amendment's freedom of worship. They didn't say freedom of religion.
That's right.
They said
that's
freedom
right.
of worship, because they wanted to relegate your freedoms to inside the four walls of the church, not being out in the public square. They don't want you out in the public square with your Christianity.
Man, Ed, thank you so much. I appreciate you, and thank you for writing this. Is religious liberty for everyone? The answer is yes. The November issue of the AFA Journal. Go to afa.net and learn how you can get a copy. Subscribe. We got to grab the break. This is the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. We'll be right back.
The Hamilton Corner podcast and one-minute commentaries are available at AFR.net and UrbanFamilyTalk.com. Back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk.
Kanye West is what happens when Negroes don't read. And we have this now, and now Donald Trump is going to use it and pervert it, and he's going to have somebody who can stand with him and take pictures.
Welcome back to the Hamilton Corner on American Family Radio and Urban Family Talk. I'm Miki, and it's my pleasure to be with you in the place of Abraham Hamilton III. Kanye West is what happens when Negroes don't read. Bakari Sellers, contributor to CNN, regular on CNN, really kind of revealing how racist these people are. Guys, I don't want you to underestimate what is happening in our country right now. There is a momentum. There is a momentum on the side of truth, right? There is a momentum on the side of independent thinking and, you know, daring to have an original thought or to communicate your own convictions, your own beliefs. There is a momentum that's on that side. And I really believe that wicked forces want to see that stifled. And so because of that, you've got a group of people, politically speaking, who have truly, genuinely, in every sense of the word, become unhinged, and they are revealing who they truly are. They are revealing who they truly are. And what they don't realize is that what they have worked to build for so many years, they are destroying in days. What they have worked to build, some of these people have worked to build careers in journalism. And for years, worked to be respected journalists. And something has happened in journalism where these people are falling on their pens left and right, murdering their careers, willing to give it all up because they are blinded by their ideology. They're willing to sacrifice what they fought for so long because of a wicked ideology. So you've got Bakari Sellers, who says that Kanye West meeting with the president, you may have heard of this, right? You heard about this happening. Kanye West meeting with the president is what happens when Negroes don't read. Now, I want to caution you. I got another clip here from Tara Setmeyer. And just be forewarned, this is not the type of rhetoric that we engage in, but I think you need to hear it. Roll it.
But now all of a sudden, Kanye, because he's put on a MAGA hat and he's an attention whore like the president, he's all of a sudden now the model spokesperson. He's the token Negro of the Trump administration. This is ridiculous. And no one should be taking Kanye West seriously. He's clearly has issues. He's already been hospitalized, you know, not to trivialize mental health issues. But I mean, obviously, Kanye has taken a turn in a very strange way. You read any of his interviews, go back and reread his interview with Charlamagne tha God. It's all over the place. So this this is not exactly the best representation, to Bakari's point, especially on an issue as important as prison reform. There's a lot of other people who are much more well-versed on this issue that are serious other than Kanye West.
You know what? Bakari Sellers and Teresette Meyer, they are what happens when the master sends the slave catcher to get the slave. When the slave leaves the plantation, Bakari Sellers and Teresette Meyer, they are what happens when the slave catcher goes to retrieve the slave. So because, take it down a notch, Miki. Okay. So because Kanye West has decided to leave the plantation, the slave catchers are on the move. And so what are they attempting to do? They want to discredit him. So he's crazy. Now, look, let me tell you something. We talked about Kanye West here for a minute. All right. He's had some wild outbursts. He's done some crazy things. I don't know if you're new to Kanye West and he's just kind of gotten on your radar because maybe Candace Owens and because of the MAGA hats and all of these things. Look, let's not kid ourselves here. There are some real issues that Kanye West has had in the past. However, he makes some real lucid points. And those lucid points are, that's what's scaring Democrats. That's what's scaring liberals. Let me make this point to you. Kanye West has influence in the culture. If Kanye West were Dennis Rodman, they would not have sent out the slave catchers. Because they're like, oh, you know, Dennis Rodman, yeah, he supports the president. He's talking about North Korea. But, you know, Dennis Rodman's been gone for a long time. And, you know, he's crazy. We don't know. And Dennis Rodman, who's listening to Dennis Rodman? So there's no need to send out the slave catchers. Essentially, it's the equivalent of like, you know what? He can't really work for us back at the plantation anyway. So like, why do we need to send people out to get him? Just, you know what? Let him go. But Kanye West, for liberal thought, for liberal ideology, there's some more working years in Kanye West. So we can't let him escape the plantation. Send out the chains with the slave catchers. And it's important that the slave catchers look like him. They stand the best chance of getting him back. This is offensive, the type of language, the type of rhetoric that these people are using as they talk about Kanye West. But they have to do it. They have to do it because what they realize is that Kanye West actually has real influence. He has real influence. People are really listening to what Kanye West has to say. And people are taking note. In fact, when Kanye West first came out and started talking about his support of the president, when he first came out and started talking about why he supports the president's agenda and the Make America Great Again hat and all of that, do you know that there was a Reuters poll that was taken that showed after his tweets and his public support of Trump, the black community's approval rating of the president increased from 11% to 22%. That was back in April. That's a significant jump, people. And please don't think that CNN, please don't think that Bakari Sellers, please don't think that these people don't know about that it is happening. So they have to send out the slave catchers to go retrieve the runaway slave. He has left the plantation. Here is a public notice. Slave on the run will be found in most cases wearing a red hat. Go get him and bring him back. Because power and control is slipping through their fingers. So they got to get him. They got to bring him back. Essie Cupp was talking about this meeting that the president gave to Kanye West, right? And she was talking about how they were both using each other. Talking about how they were just very self-serving, desperate for attention. All these things that they said, calling it tragic and things like that, and saying that the president was exploiting Kanye West's mental health and all of these things, right? But when you watch the meeting, you watch the interaction, first of all, you realize that the press is allowed in there and we are allowed to see what's going on because both the president and Kanye West both recognize that this is something that people care about. The president said himself, you know, there's other things going on, but this is what y'all want. Y'all want to hear me meet with Kanye West. And please keep in mind that after that, they were going to go have lunch. So they're not, there's nothing decided with finality after or during this meeting that we get to see. But I want you to understand something that happened that I think was missed, or maybe people just didn't care in this meeting with President Trump and Kanye West. And then I want to talk a little bit about why I don't think that we need to do what the left does. I don't think that we need to hold Kanye West up as some sort of champion of conservative values. We're too quick to do that. The left does this for sport. They do this all the time. It is routine for them. But I got to tell you, I think that as conservatives, we're a little bit smarter than this. We don't need to be trotting out Kanye West at conservative conventions or bringing Kanye West to our church and all of this stuff. Like there's some issues there. But I do think that Kanye West gives us an opportunity to shine a light on liberals and their hypocrisy and their hatred and their racism. And that's what I want to do. And that's what I want to do. But I also want to point to something that's very important. About 2 months ago, I think it was, Kanye West was talking about, you know, his MAGA hat and why it was such a problem for people. But also around that time, there were some polling numbers that came out that showed that the president's approval rating was increasing among the Black community, and that in particular, it was most significant among Black men, that he was almost doubling in his approval rating among Black men. And my husband, Will the Great, and I had a conversation around this and we're trying to just, you know, what do you think could be the change and what do you think could be going on? And one of the things that Will said, and I agree with him, he said, well, because Black men are drawn to strength. There is a show of strength in this president. This was a few months ago. He said, there's a show of strength in this president that is appealing to Black men. Black men are not drawn to weakness. They are drawn to strength. And this president has shown strength. Now, fast forward to the meeting that Kanye West had with the president on yesterday. And one of the things that Kanye West said, and I don't know if people caught this, but one of the things that Kanye West said was that when he put on this Make America Great Again hat, he said he felt like Superman. He said this hat gave him a cape. He said this hat basically gave me a cape. And then he went on and he talked about not growing up with a lot of male energy. Look, the use of the term energy and universe, those are problematic for me. I'm not going to even pretend like that's okay with me, right? So I'm not going to quote it with any level of authority like that's valid. But this is just what he said. So he talked about not growing up with a lot of male energy. And then he talked about marrying into a family where, yeah, there's not a lot of male energy going on. But he said there was something about this message and something about this hat. There was a strength in it that made him feel like Superman. He called the MAGA hat his cape. He talked about during the Hillary Clinton campaign, he said, you know, the whole I'm with her thing. It didn't make me feel like I could play catch with my son. Let me tell you what that tells me. That suggests to me that this move to emasculate men in our culture is being felt by men in our culture, even if they're not conservative. But there was something else that happened in this meeting. And I don't know how much of the media is going to point this out. I don't know how much credit the president is going to get for this. Even among Christians, there are people who are they remain in the camp of the Never Trumpers, and they can't point to anything good that this president is doing. Oh, he's just so arrogant. He's so prideful. I can't. But there was a moment in the exchange between the president and Kanye West that was one of the most humble moments that I have seen from this president. It was a very sad moment, in my opinion. And it's one that I think the media will overlook. And Essie Cupp, and that's what I started to say, I didn't finish that thought. She said basically that the president was exploiting Kanye West like Kanye West was exploiting the president. He's taking advantage. And Tara Setmeyer said they want to be able to stand next to each other and say, oh, look who's on my team, this kind of a thing. That could not be further from the truth. And let me give you the proof of it. This is Cut 5. Jason, roll it.
Honestly, from our standpoint, this was just set up to be a lunch of two people that I like. And I guess they like me. And we're going to have lunch. We're going to talk.
You said, yes, you know I love you.
I know.
Did I?
But I don't want to take. I don't want to put you in that spot. But.
No, I'm standing in that spot. I love this guy right here. Let me give this guy a hug right here. I love this guy right here.
That's really, yeah. Come here. Yeah. That's really nice. And that's from the heart. I didn't want to put you in that position, you know, but that's from the heart. Special guy. These two are special people. Whether you like it, whether you don't like it, they're special people.
Guys, I don't know, man. There is something about that exchange that it doesn't matter how many times I hear it. It touches me deeply. Because let me tell you what our president was saying in that moment. Our president was saying, I know what it means for anyone in this country to be associated with me. I know that it means death to your career. I know that it means death to all of your endeavors to be associated with me. And so I hate to use the word tender. The president probably wouldn't even approve of that, the use of that word. I don't like tender, right? But it was a tender moment. Guys, it was probably one of the most vulnerable positions that I have seen our president in as president. Seriously, this is probably one of the most vulnerable moments, because what President Trump was saying is that I know how these people feel about me. And I know what it means in this current climate for anyone to vouch for me. These people who once rubbed shoulders with me, they have distanced themselves from me. And so what did the president say? The president said, I guess they like me, I guess. And what does Kanye West say? He says, you said, I guess. Man, you know I love you. He says, I didn't want to put you in that position. What is that position? The position of possibly being accosted out in public. Do you guys understand that when Kanye West came out and started talking about the president and his agenda and his support of it, you know, he got death threats? He's in a community that is characterized by violence. And I'm not talking about being from Chicago. I'm talking about the hip hop music industry. It's characterized. When he came out and said, man, I had people hitting me up saying, you better watch your back. Don't let us catch you in this neighborhood. And so essentially what the president is saying, now keep in mind, this is coming from the man who, you know, we've done the best. We've been the best. I am the best. But in a moment that our media will not touch, they will not play that for you on loop. They won't let you hear that. They want you to think he was exploiting Kanye West. If he were exploiting him, he would have spoken in terms of, Kanye, you love me. I love you. We're in this together. No, he didn't do that. He tried to protect Kanye West from himself. Guys, that's big. That's huge. Independent thought is making a comeback in this country. You can be a part of that. Don't you let anybody intimidate you. Don't you let anybody threaten you. Independent thinking is making a comeback. You need to be a part of it. Make sure you're registered to vote. Make sure you are part of Solutions November 6th. God bless you.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.